Good evening. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. It's a cold Monday here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. How about where you live? We have frost warnings again tonight? I know, in some parts of the country we already have 27 or 54 inches of snow, but it's kind of weird to wake up in the North Georgia foothills to 30, what was this morning, 36 degrees? Colder than a well digger's ass. Molly said, Daddy, what happened to fall? We have a lot of good stuff for you tonight. Do you have that thing from John Kyle and Debbie Stabenow? Is that how she, okay, she's a senator from Michigan, I think. Now, this is not new, but Chris Matthews on Hardball ran it again. This came out, I don't know, a couple of months ago, this little bit of audio and video. But our ever-alert military affairs correspondent, Sharon, caught it and sent me the link again. She writes, I just got home and saw this on Chris Matthews. She says, these rat bastards don't want women to use birth control. They don't want women to have abortions. But by God, if a woman gets pregnant, John Kyle does not want her to have prenatal care. I hate these SOBs. She's referring to, the first voice you hear is Debbie Stabenow on this committee, and then John Kyle on the committee also.
And I don't think you can go forward and allow 60% of the insurance companies not to provide basic maternity care in a new system we're setting up that hopefully is going to be better than the old one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Kyle.
Well, first of all, I don't need maternity care. And so requiring that to be in my insurance policy is something that I don't need and will make the policy more expensive.
If I could just interject once with my colleague, I think your mom probably did.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. What is it with Oklahoma and Arizona that they produce these things that wind up in the Senate? Okay. I guess every woman then can rightfully claim, back at you, Kyle, I don't want any coverage in my insurance plan for that covers prostate cancer or a vasectomy or anything having to do with male gonads. I mean, this is insane.
Yeah, certainly no Viagra prescription.
No probably. Viagra prescriptions, right.
But it's reminiscent to me of the baddie birthers who, you know, keep wanting to make sure that Obama presents his birth certificate to prove his nationality. And I just keep thinking, just find out where his mama was, you know, because if she's in labor, that's where he's going to be.
Right.
That's the part that always kills me. It's like, you want to know where Obama was born? Where did his mama have him?
All right, enough logic.
Yeah, my head hurts.
I know. It's just, I don't know, when a guy like Kyle says that, this John Kyle, I mean, do the people back in Arizona applaud him? Do they think that's really an essential statement to make? Well, you know, I don't need maternity care, so I don't think it ought to be in a health program. Healthcare reform, and it's not healthcare anyway, it's health insurance reform. I don't need it, so it shouldn't be in there. What the hell? I mean, whiskey tango, you know what I'm saying. Professor Noam Chomsky is probably one of America's most enduring, how to describe him? He's a linguist by trade, but he's a anti-capitalist, anti-war, pro common sense approach to everything in life kind of scholar, Noam Chomsky. His anthology of post 9/11 commentary has nothing to do with 9/11. Has been banned at Guantanamo's prison camp library. Now, this library offers books and videos on, for example, Harry Potter, World Cup soccer, Islam. U.S. military censors, according to the Miami Herald, have rejected a Pentagon lawyer's donation of an Arabic language copy of the political activist and linguistic professor's anthology. The library at Guantanamo has more than 16,000 items. Isn't that nice? We have a torture camp with a library. Son of a bitch. Did the Nazis have that? I don't even know. Chomsky, who has been voicing disgust with U.S. foreign policy since the Vietnam War, reacted with irritation and derision when he heard about it. He told the Miami Herald by email after learning of this decision, quote, this happens sometimes in totalitarian regimes, end quote. He went on to say, quote, of some incidental interest, perhaps, is the nature of the book they banned. It consists of op-ed pieces written for the New York Times syndicate and distributed by them. The subversive rot must run very deep, end quote. A collection of his columns written for the New York Times syndicate. Now, prison camp officials, who now all work for Barack Obama, would not say specifically why the book was rejected. But Navy Lieutenant Commander Brooke DeWalt, a Guantanamo spokesman, said staff reviews, quote, every proposed or recommended library item to assess force protection issues associated with camp dynamics, such as impact on good order and discipline, end quote. Oh, my God. A rejection slip accompanying the Chomsky book did not explain the reason it was rejected, but listed categories of restricted literature, which includes those espousing, quote, anti-American, anti-Semitic, anti-Western ideology, literature on so-called military topics, and works that portray, quote, excessive graphic violence and, quote, sexual dysfunctions, end quote. Anti-American and anti-Semitic? It doesn't say anything here about anti-Catholic or anti-Muslim or anti-Hindu or just anti-American and anti-Semitic. It doesn't say anti-Protestant. Why anti-Semitic? Oh, well. Finer minds than mine made the determination, right? JonathanTurley.org, whom a lot of people think should have been the Attorney General under the Barack Obama administration, but has been... he's a professor at where? George Washington University? Is that where he teaches constitutional law? Is it George Washington? I'm not sure. That's beside the point. The point is he has a blog site, JonathanTurley.org, and he writes prolifically since he is an attorney and an essayist. He has something about Barack Obama moving to change a law in order to avoid Supreme Court ruling on withheld detainee photos. Now, remember, the Supreme Court has ruled, appellate courts have ruled that these photos of torture should be released as a result of a lawsuit filed by the ACLU. The appeals courts have upheld lower court rulings. Yes, release them. The issue is now going to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, according to insiders, is probably going to rule that under our constitutional separation of powers, that the president has no right to say no. So as far as the release is concerned, there is no constitutional right. This is not a goddamn dictatorship. Well, I'm sorry. This is a nascent dictatorship. Therefore, all the rules have not solidified yet. So until they are solidified, which they probably will soon be, the separation of powers clauses of the Constitution would dictate that the Supreme Court has to rule that Barack Obama has no right to withhold publication of these photos. Now, they're not ruling on the pertinence of the photos. They're not ruling on the artistic quality of the photos or whether or not the photos will damage U.S. reputation. They're ruling on whether or not the President of the United States has the right to withhold a publication. Well, wait till you find out what Barack Obama had to say. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Strikes for higher wage, planet lurches to the right as ideologies engage. Suddenly it's repression. eviction moratorium.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. So, our progressive president is, you know, our the world's newest Nobel Peace Laureate. As Jonathan Turley points out, Obama is again expanding on the policies of former President George Bush and fighting to conceal evidence of U.S. torture and abuse. Just like the Bush administration did, the Obama administration is trying to change the law after the lower courts have rejected the argument that the President of the United States can withhold photos of detainee abuse simply because they're embarrassing to the United States. Now, these are not pictures of your auntie Janet at a party, Mr. President, throwing up after she drank too much of the punch. These are different from that. They really are. Turley says Democrats in Congress are assisting in the effort to try to stop the Supreme Court from considering the issue by coming up with a law that would preempt the litigation. This is the Obama administration is doing this. Turley goes on to say Obama has thus far worked as a barrier rather than a catalyst for international law, a barrier for international law and values in the areas of torture and abuse. Turley says his position in the case of ACLU versus Department of Defense is reprehensible and exceeds the arguments made by Bush. What? Turley says that Barack Obama is claiming that he can deny the media and the public these pictures simply because he views them as controversial and likely to cause anger from Muslims. Obama has taken another lesson from Bush, according to Turley, unable to win on the merits because this has been rejected by two courts, lower court and appellate court. Obama has now called on Congress to simply change the rules before the Supreme Court can vote. Democrats have joined the effort and are now close to passing legislation to remove the courts from the controversy. And then Turley gets down. He writes, the position of President Obama in the case is disgraceful. Solicitor General Elena Kagan has admitted that the pictures show such things as, quote, soldiers pointing pistols or rifles at the heads of hooded and handcuffed detainees. In another, quote, a soldier holds a broom as if sticking its end into the rectum of a restrained detainee, end quote. Kagan has taken the extraordinary step of asking the Supreme Court to delay considering the case, to allow Congress to kill the case before the Supreme Court through legislation. This is the Obama presidency. As a result, if that happens, as Turley points out, no court would be allowed to rule on the release of the photographs, and authority would be transferred to the Department of Defense. And as Turley points out, had Bush done such a thing, you know, giving the Pentagon control, Democrats would have been in the streets. Well, not really, Jonathan. We don't do that anymore. But Democrats would have been screaming. As Turley says, however, Democratic leaders are supporting the effort. The media are largely silent. And the Democratic base is passive, which really means doesn't give a damn. Turley says this move contradicts Obama's pledge of transparency in government. It contradicts his pledge to make a full account of abuses. It makes a mockery of his award of the Nobel for encouraging international dialogue. It appears that dialogue must still occur on the terms set by the United States and specifically avoids evidence that would embarrass the United States or show clearly how it, the United States, has violated international law. End quote, Jonathan Turley. JonathanTurley.org. Oh my, there's not a day that goes by that my desperate attempt to hold on to some shred of hope for the Obama administration isn't just shredded even further. But then he'll come out, like, he'll come out and give a speech maybe later this week. And, you know, Malloy being Malloy, I'll just say, oh, man, that was really a good speech. All right, I'll give him one more chance. This is funny. This is funny except for the fact that it's really tragic. I mean, it really is. You know it is. You know this is all tragic. You know this is all unbelievably, insanely tragic. Huh? The Obama administration trying to protect the Bush administration. The Bush administration was a collection of international lawbreakers, bandits, war criminals, people who committed treason against their own country. Well, I guess there isn't any other treason, is there? All of that. A crime family responsible for two wars that make zero sense, the deaths of God only knows how many, or Allah, or I don't know, maybe Ronald McDonald knows how many. Who knows how many are dead because of Bush's lies. And the Obama administration wants to protect that crime family. Oi, 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 oi.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It is about 26 before the hour. Reason Weekly, I don't know if you read it. It's a humanist publication, and they like to debunk some of the claims made by organized religion. And one of them that's being debunked right now, Americans usually tell pollsters that they go to church in these immense numbers. And when asked, most people say, I read the Bible. Yeah. Remember books, George, it was his favorite book or favorite something. Church attendance, as established by surveys, is one of the main factors that are used to illustrate the depth of religious feeling here in America. Now, depending on which poll you consult, between a third and 40%, between 33%, 43% of Americans claim to attend church weekly. Now, what Reason has done, some interesting figures here. Using the low end of that range, 33% is a third. That would give you a figure of around 100 million people, if that number's right. 100 million. And according to Reason Weekly, even cursory research, however, reveals that this cannot be true for the simple reason there are not enough seats in all the churches in America to hold nearly as many people. 100 million is what the claim is. That's on the low side. If you go up even higher, go up to say 40%, it would be 125 million. But let's stay at the low figure, 100 million. According to the U.S. Churches database, there exists 68,574 churches in the United States, 68,000 plus, of which 1,200 are mega churches. That's defined as a church having a seating capacity of over 2,000. Let's assume, as Reason Weekly did, that the average maximum occupancy of a megachurch is 10,000. Now, if you have 1,200 of them, that would give you a total of 12,100,000 seats. So if all the megachurches are full, 12,100,000 seats. Now, ignore for a moment the fact that a study conducted this year by the evangelical Christian Outreach magazine, tracking the biggest 100 churches in the U.S., puts their total weekly attendance at just 631,000. It is mathematically impossible for all 1,200 megachurches to have over 6 million attendants per week. It can't be done. But for the sake of erring on the side of caution, let's go with 12,100,000. If all the megachurches were full every Sunday, 12 million. Now, the remaining 67,000-plus churches are medium and small-size operations, which can hold no more than 2,000 people, or they would have been included in the megachurch category. To accurately establish the average seating capacity for these remaining churches would be hard. But a guess of 200 seats per church seems fair. And one of 300 seems bounteous. Let's make it 400. 400 seats per church. And the 67,000 little churches, but keep in mind, the small-town churches, which needfully must comprise the majority of these 67,000, are much tinier than that. But let's go with 400. Even with those grossly inflated numbers, the total seating capacity of non-megachurch establishments clocks in at 26,900,000. 26.9 million. Now add to that the 12 million seats of the megachurches, and you come up with 39 million. Now, some large churches, though a minority, hold more than one weekly service. So add 20 million extra seats in our tally. That brings us up to 59 million Americans. That's assuming that all the churches are filled to capacity, that even the smallest of them can accommodate at least 400 people, and that liberally adding 20 million extra seats, the total number of available seats in churches across America is 59 million. A little over half of what be necessary to accommodate all the people who claim to go to church weekly if you go with a third. So what does that mean? Well, very simply, an awful lot of Americans are lying through their goddamn teeth about church. How do you lie about church? How do you lie about church? Oh! And that's just going with low figures on the people who claim to go to church and high figures on the capacity of the churches and the probable number of people sitting their butts in the pews on Sunday or Wednesday, if you're a Baptist. Right? Yeah, we're doing church. I've got to. This stuff accumulates. Maybe it's the weekend. In Texas, this comes via the Telegraph of the UK. In Texas, there's a man sentenced to die on November 5th, of course, it's Texas. He was sentenced to death about 10 years ago for committing murder in a house he was burgling. The victim was shot in the face and beaten with his own rifle. Bad crime. Nasty crime. Horrible crime. But it later emerged that while deciding whether he should be given the death penalty, jurors consulted the Bible. No. Why not the Quran? Why not the Bhagavad Gita? No, the Bible. Four jury members admitted that several copies had been in the jury room and that highlighted passages were passed around. At one point, a juror reportedly read aloud from a copy, including this passage, quote, "And if he smite him with an instrument of iron so that he die, he is a murderer, and the murderer shall surely be put to death," end quote. Well, the accused in this case had smitten the victim with iron, his own rifle, in a manner of speaking. Defense lawyers argued in appeals that jurors had been properly influenced by the Bible. But the trial judge said, nah. The Texas Appeals Court said, nah. Now, the U.S. Constitution calls for the separation of state and religion, right? In 2005, for example, the state Supreme Court in Colorado, of all places, overturned a death penalty on a convicted murderer because jurors had consulted the Bible while deliberating over his sentence. The guy was named Robert Harlan. He was sentenced instead to life imprisonment without parole. The court ruled that the Bible constituted, quote, an improper outside influence, end quote, and a reliance on what it called, quote, a higher authority, end quote. See, that's not the way juries work. Kathy would know. Kathy sat on a jury here, a murder trial. However, a federal appeals court ruled last year that while the Bible should not have been allowed into the deliberation room of the guy in Texas, his trial, there was no clear evidence to indicate the Bible's had influenced the juror's decision. And in April of this year, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the appeal. Kate Allen, who's with Amnesty International, said the trial was a travesty, her word. She said, quote, religious texts provide consolation and spiritual guidance for billions of people the world over. But this use of the Bible to decide life or death in a capital trial is deeply, deeply troubling, end quote. Well, when you stop and think about it, though, isn't that what the religious Bible thumpers in this country constantly claim that the Muslims do with the Holy Quran? Don't they? And don't the religious nut cases in this case, the Christians in this country, aren't they constantly screaming about death to Islam, death to the Muslim pagans, death to bastardization of the true faith, which is theirs, you know, Christianity? Isn't it the same thing? Isn't it exactly the same thing? The Quran talks about stoning people to death for committing crime. Well, so does the book of Leviticus, but we've got beyond that. Or have we? So here we are. And if he smite him with an instrument of iron so that he die, he is a murderer. The murderer shall surely be put to death. Well, well, well. Oh, there's some crazy stuff in Nigeria, too, in that African country that has experienced a wave of evangelical Christian craziness in the past few years. The story in, I think it was New York Times. I'm not going to share the whole thing with you, but it starts out, Huffington Post? It starts out, a 9-year-old boy lay on a blood-stained hospital sheet crawling with ants, staring blindly at the wall. His family pastor had accused him of being a witch. And his father then tried to force acid down his throat as an exorcism. It spilled as he struggled, burning away the boy's face and eyes. The emaciated boy barely had strength left to whisper the name of the church that had denounced him, Mount Zion Lighthouse. A month later, he died. In Africa, a increasing number of children are being accused of witchcraft by Christian pastors and then tortured or killed, often by family members. Pastors were involved in half of 200 cases of witch children reviewed by the Associated Press. And 13 churches were named in the case files. Some of the churches involved are renegade local branches of international franchises. Their parishioners take literally the biblical exhortation, quote, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, end quote. Gary Foxcroft, who's the head of a nonprofit organization, Stepping Stones Nigeria, said, quote, it is an outrage what they are allowing to take place in the name of Christianity. Now, of course, if you are a student of history to any degree, you know that this is not new. In the, pick the number, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th centuries, millions of women were burned at the stake across Europe for the crime of witchcraft. But that was so long ago, wasn't it? Here we are now. Evangelical Christian pastors in Nigeria and across Africa ordering the deaths of children because they are witches.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Oh, yes. Michael writes, and speaking of exorcisms and witches, what visiting African pastor at a certain church in Wasilla, Alaska, endorsed and blessed which vice presidential candidate in the last election? Keep the witches away. Oh, my God. Well, we got to lighten up a little bit. So we go to Robert Crumb, of course, who you remember Robert Crumb, the illustrator, He is, I guess, most famous for Fritz the Cat. But all sorts of stuff. Do you remember? But the underground comic, Fritz the Cat, not the one on in the old movies. Sexually graphic underground comic strips is what Robert Crumb. Did you see that special? Was it on HBO? That was fascinating about the Crumb family. Actually, a documentary, I guess, called Crumb. Anyway, he has written a sexually explicit illustrated book of Genesis, which features Bible characters having intercourse and so on and so forth. The book, which is released this month, carries this warning, quote, adult supervision recommended for minors, end quote. And it's described by the publishers as, quote, scandalous satire, end quote. Satire? Anyway, it includes graphic illustrations of Bible characters having sexual intercourse, like Lot and his daughters, and other scenes depicting naked men and women, as well as so-called gratuitous depictions of violence. He says, Crum says he doesn't believe that the Bible is the Word of God. He says, quote, I take it all for myth from start to finish, with probably some faint relation to historical reality, end quote. He went on to say, quote, they're great stories, but for people to take texts as something sacred handed down from God, that's pretty backward, I think, end quote. It's called The Book of Genesis, illustrated by R. Crum. It has been criticized by leading religious groups such as the Christian Institute. A spokesman for the Christian Institute, a religious think tank. Now, pause for a moment and think about that. A religious think tank. But you don't think in religion. You use faith, not thought. Not critical analysis. Anyway, a spokesman for the Christian Institute said, quote, it is turning the Bible into titillation. It seems wholly inappropriate for what is essentially God's rescue plan for mankind. This guy from the Christian Institute goes on to say, quote, if you're going to publish your own version of the Bible, it must be done with a great deal of sensitivity. The Bible is a very important text to many people and should be treated with the respect it deserves. Representing it in your own way is all very well and good, but it must be remembered that it is a matter of people's faith or religion. And faith is an important part of people's lives. And one must remember to tread very carefully, end quote. Now, immediately, one captures in one's mind, at least this one does, what if R. Crumb had depicted a section of the Muslim Quran with naked people having sexual intercourse? Woo! Holy whoever! Man! You talk about an executive order from every Muslim council of elders or whatever it is called around the globe to put a death sentence on R. Crumb's head, right? Which points up the craziness of all this. Now, if I were R. Crumb, as he calls himself, if I were Robert, I would not want to be around too many Christian people right now. There are enough crazy people out there assassinating doctors, because they provide health services for women in a private setting. And, R. Crumb now, I would imagine, and not just Christians, but maybe a few Jews are going to be pissed off about this too, you think? Because this is their text. The Christians just, you know, appropriated it. One of the scenes that you can see if you go online is Lot and his daughters, and it's pretty it's typically Robert Crumb. That's all. It's just, you know, you can imagine. Some religious figures have been more supportive of the work. The Bishop of Croydon in the UK, the Right Reverend Nick Bain, says, quote, I don't think it was satire. He set out to say, this is important fundamental myth, and it seems to me he's done a good job. A spokeswoman for the Bible Society in the UK said she hadn't seen the book, but the reviews had suggested that Crumb had, quote, really engaged, end quote, with the book of Genesis. Oh yeah. She went on to say, it may surprise people, but the Bible does contain nudity, sex, and violence. That's because it contains real stories about real people. If by reading the book, people are encouraged to re-engage with the Bible, then that can only be a good thing, end quote. Talk about turning lemons into lemonade, right? A spokesman for the Church of England said, quote, I haven't seen the book, but I think trying to sell something by emphasizing the sexual nature of some of the scenes doesn't seem to be a good way to pass on the message of the Bible, end quote. It depends, I guess, on what one considers to be the message of the Bible. If one considers the Old Testament to be a record of extreme violence, incest, fornication, multiple wives, all sorts of debauchery, almost infanticide, or at least killing your own child for some voice talking in your head. I mean, all this stuff, you know, invading other countries and slaughtering everybody, salting the earth so nothing will ever grow there. Angels passing over entire civilizations, murdering the firstborn, innocent and guilty alike. Woo! I mean, two naked people in a garden where a snake seduces, in a manner of speaking, one of the naked people, and her punishment is to be the one responsible for all pain, suffering, darkness, death, destruction, murder, mayhem, chaos, ever, to ever afflict the human race. Wow, man, that's a heavy burden for women to bear, don't you think?
Are you burdened?
Welcome back. 7 past the hour, the Malloy Show. I guess you heard the good news. The Obama administration has ordered the Justice Department to not to prosecute medical marijuana use. Well, hold on just a second, Booby. There may be something to that story that most media has overlooked, but the San Francisco Chronicle has not. We'll get to that in a second. But I think I want to share with you tonight's email from Prairie 2, edited tonight because it's rather lengthy. Prairie 2 writes, consider the situation of a California man who lost his savings to the convicted Ponzi schemer Bernie Madoff. Unlike millions of other Americans, this man has managed to find work, albeit as a supermarket door greeter. His boss says he is an inspiration to us all. But since he's been forced to go back to work at age 95, he should not be an inspiration but a wake-up call. There will be millions of people who won't be able to retire since their 401ks and pensions have been looted by the financial services industry. Don't kid yourself that the market is going to stay up. Predatory capitalism needs prey, and the hunting is getting thin. By next year, the majority of U.S. workers will be women. This is up from 40% when Ronald Reagan campaigned for a return to 1950, when women were 28% of the workforce. Reagan actually ran for president on the idea that too many women were working. Of course, his policies were really aimed at every woman having a job so that overall wages could be driven down and the middle class destroyed. In 1980, it was not difficult for a family to live on a single income. Now, two or three are required to have the same standard of living. Today, women are increasingly becoming the main breadwinner in the family, not because they're making more money, but because the jobs their husbands trained for have either been outsourced or have disappeared entirely with the collapse of the economy. door greeting simply does not pay that well. Many men, and women too, have retrained several times as career after career disappears, and all they have to show for it is student loans that they have to repay with ever smaller incomes. The official advice being passed out to men at state counseling offices, job counseling offices, forget about ever getting a job like you had, and go after a woman's job. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Medical marijuana. Hasn't that been a weird story? Here we are in the year of the BCE, 2009, or AD or something. What do you call it? CE, not BCE. Come on, Mike. Here we are in CE, 2009, and still, the only way for somebody to get marijuana legally is to claim an illness or to have an illness. I'm not, you know, I'm a lot of people who are sick get a lot of good from marijuana, which was, in fact, a medicinal plant to begin with. The fact that makes you a little bit high or altered or sideways or whatever is totally beside the point, except in certain countries where religious extremism is dominant, and at least in our laws, and that's this country included, of course. So, The Obama administration announced new guidelines for pot prosecutions today. And as the Bob Igelko, Chronicle staff writer, San Francisco Chronicle, points out, this announcement lacks the specifics needed to keep patients and their suppliers out of court. Stephen Gutwillig, who's the California State Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, said, quote, "It's an extremely welcome rhetorical de-escalation of the federal government's longstanding war on medical marijuana patients." The California coordinator of NORML said the administration's advice to U.S. attorneys that they respect state law, such as California's Prop 215, that's the 1996 measure legalizing medicinal use of the drug, that was encouraging. However, Dave Geringer, the California coordinator for NORML, added, quote, "The policy has major loopholes that give prosecutors broad discretion to determine what they think is legal," end quote. Uh-oh. Now, what everybody's talking about, a Justice Department memo sent today to federal prosecutors in California and the other 13 states where laws allow medicinal use of marijuana, provides guidelines to implement the policy that Attorney General Eric Holder announced in March, that federal authorities should refrain from arresting or prosecuting people who are complying with their state's laws. Well, that seems reasonable in this particular instance. Now, if the state's laws said something to the effect that, you know, every third child should be killed, you know, borrowing from Exodus, that would be different, right? But this is about reefer. The directive said federal prosecutors should focus instead on major drug traffickers and networks rather than those who, quote, "are in clear and unambiguous compliance with existing state laws," end quote, on medical marijuana. That's according to the Deputy Attorney General David Ogden, but he added some qualifications. For example, prosecutors can go after those who sell marijuana for profit. Well, how do the marijuana distributors in California, how do they get their marijuana? Don't they have to buy it from someone? And as far as profit is concerned, what constitutes profit? If somebody says, "Here, I grew this pot, it's $1,000 a pound," how do we know that any of that's profit? Maybe it's just a generous determination of the price. On the other hand, maybe the entire thousand is profit. You see where we're going here? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Prosecutors can go after those who sell marijuana for profit. And that's the category. Marijuana profiteers that federal authorities have commonly invoked in charging growers and sellers of medicinal pot. Well, yeah, so what's changed? San Francisco's U.S. attorney, Joseph Russaniello, asserted in August that most of California's 300 marijuana dispensaries make profits. in violation of state's guidelines and therefore are open to federal prosecution. If you are a marijuana dispensary, how do you stay open? You know, lights on, pay the clerks to come in. I mean, you know, when the California Power and Light or whatever the hell it's called comes around to collect the electric bill, what do you do? Mail them an ounce of pot? No, because then you're violating more laws. The assistant attorney general, I should say the deputy attorney general, Eric Holder's deputy, Mr. Ogden, said also that the Justice Department would fight any effort by people now charged with marijuana-related crimes in federal court to claim that they were simply following state law. Oh, I see. So you boys are changing it. You Obama boys are changing it. But anybody facing charges right now, you're not going to grandfather them in, huh? I mean, that's too bad. Even though when the death penalty has been declared, you know, illegal or against the Constitution, or when the legislatures, various state, I'm talking about state interpretations, when various legislatures have taken off the books, people waiting on death row usually have had their death sentences commuted, but not in the case of pot growers. Hell no! In fact, even those who are clearly complying with the state's law can be investigated and prosecuted, according to the Justice Department, in the pursuit of, quote, important federal interests, end quote. What? So, Obama giveth, Obama taketh awayeth. It's what it looks like to me. Leaves a lot of discretion up to U.S. attorneys, doesn't it? Huh? The law, apparently, is what I say it is. If I am a federal attorney, if I am the president of the United States, I can say, even though my name isn't George Bush, I can say, I do not want those photos released. Why not? Because I don't.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Even those who are clearly complying with the state's marijuana laws can be investigated and prosecuted, according to the Associate Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General, come on, Mike, David Ogden. Well, that appears then that the announcement today that people who use medical marijuana and their advocates will not be busted. It looks like it's a joke. A joke waiting to be, or a trap waiting to be sprung on people if the occasion warrants it. And there's no retroactive action here. I don't know. This is a little worrisome, isn't it, huh? When you have an administration that continues to do stuff like this, I don't quite get this. I really don't. I mean, haven't we heard since, especially from the white crazy people in this country, or the crazy white people, that states' rights trumps everything, right? And haven't we heard from the that comes from the intellectuals in that mindset? The Federalists have been saying the same thing forever. States' rights, states' rights. Even William Buckley advocated complete, if not legalization, decriminalization of marijuana. I don't get the difference, but I'm sure it's in there. Don't write to me and tell me what the difference is. To me, it's one and the same. Decriminalization, legalization, yada, yada, yada. This is one of those issues that's been going on for how long? Since the 30s? When did that crazy, was it, what was it, a federal prosecutor, attorney general, who I'm drawing a complete blank now, and you don't have to send me information because I'm not going to really get that deep into it. But when the marijuana laws were passed, then, of course, Rockefeller's laws in the state of New York back in the 70s, oh, my God, where people were sentenced to 20, 30, 40 years in prison for marijuana possession, for selling an ounce or a pound or 10 pounds to somebody else. Now, please don't misunderstand. When I advocate the complete legalization of marijuana, I am not advocating the continuation of the murder and mayhem that is committed by the Mexican drug lords, Mexican marijuana, Mexican this, Mexican that. No, I'm talking about the people in the United States of America who grow marijuana, and there are many, many, many of them. I did a piece, I've said this before, in Atlanta Magazine 25 years ago, 30 years ago, 30 years ago for Atlanta Magazine, wherein I made the declaration based on fact that marijuana was Georgia's number one cash crop, domestically grown marijuana. That was 30 goddamn years ago. Okay, maybe 28 years ago. It was the number one cash crop. It is the number one cash crop in California. It comes very close to being the number one cash crop in Florida, if you don't consider beef. Oh yeah, it's bigger than oranges. Yeah, hell yeah. Number one cash crop possibly in Texas, if you don't consider oil. That's a commodity, not a crop. Come on, Mike. In fact, I had statistics years ago that the number one cash crop in the United States was untaxed marijuana. Homegrown. I'm not talking about crap coming from anyplace else. And some of that crap, you know, obviously is pretty good. I'm sorry, Canadians. I'm sorry, Mexicans. We're talking domestic issue here. So it's been an issue that is just crazed. It's insane. This is insane. We still lock people up for sale or possession. It leaves me speechless. Just speechless. Incredible. 32 years ago, I sold an ounce of marijuana to a friend here in Atlanta. And he was happy as a mudlark. And he said, hey, I've got another friend who wants to buy an ounce of pot. I said, sure. I'll get it for you. So I sold it to this guy. His name was Larry, and about 3 or 4 months later, there was a knock on the door where I was living, and I can just say this, the rest of it was rather intense, rather intense. So, no, have I ever been to prison? No, of course not, but Only as a visitor. Only when I used to take our band Flood in to entertain the inmates at a youth prison here in North Georgia. But the idea that people can be arrested, incarcerated, families broken up over marijuana. I am not an advocate of the amphetamine-like drugs. Not even cocaine. You know, the use of cocaine is a bastardization. It's a prostitution of the chewing of coca leaves that people who live in, 10,000, 15,000, 18,000 feet above sea level in South America have been doing for millennia. No, I'm not in favor of cocaine. I'm not in favor of the use of heroin. I'm not in favor of, especially not meth or any of its derivatives, the speed crap that's eating people's brains out. I'm talking about smoking a little reefer. Oh, my God.
because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
First director of the Bureau of Narcotics. It's 25 before the hour. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you would like to join in. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. I don't quite understand this. I do on one hand. On the other, it's a little scary to me. Fewer than half of Americans, this is on NPR.org, fewer than half of Americans say they're planning to get the H1N1 flu vaccine, according to recent polls. And, of course, that's leaving many so-called health professionals at a complete loss. They don't know how to process this. The an emergency medicine physician, Emory University School of Medicine here in Atlanta, who's been treating swine flu cases, says, quote, "I'm genuinely baffled. The public has developed this odd sense of complacency. The only thing that comes to my mind is photos of people standing on the seawall in Galveston, Texas, hours before the hurricane hit," end quote. The CDC here in Atlanta says an unusually high number of children have died since H1N1 entered the general population last spring. A spokesman for CDC said, quote, "There are now a total of 86 children under 18 who have died from the 2009 H1N1 influenza virus," end quote. But I don't know. It's just... You know, a lot of different reasons why people say they're not going to get vaccinated. According to polls, a third are worried about side effects. Almost another third said they don't believe they're at risk for a serious case of flu, while another quarter say they can get medication to treat the flu if they do get sick. And it's that last one that worries some of the CDC people, or at least this Dr. Kellerman, emergency medicine physician, Emory University School of Medicine. He says, quote, "This flu, seemingly by random, occasionally picks out a healthy child or young adult, puts them in an intensive care unit hanging on by a thread. We don't have thousands and thousands of ICU beds and high-frequency jet ventilators standing by to care for these people," end quote. Communications director for the CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases says, quote, "There's too much at risk to try to use scare tactics to get people to vaccinate. While we don't want to scare people into getting vaccinated, we also want to make the disease real," end quote. Professor of Health Policy at Harvard says, quote, about government officials, "They really can lose public credibility for decades if what they do is threaten that thousands are going to die and be hospitalized and it doesn't occur. They feel confident there's going to be an outbreak, but they don't know how many severe cases there will be." This is kind of like back in the late 70s during the last time anyone's talking about swine flu, which this is not. This is not swine flu. I don't know why it continues to be called that. The opposition of so many people appears to be a part of the larger anti-government movement ever since Barack Obama got elected and since he decided to overhaul the nation's healthcare system. The pig, Glenn Beck, the suicider, told his viewers on Fox News that he would, quote, "do the exact opposite," end quote, of whatever the government recommends. So-called liberal, I guess libertarian liberal Bill Maher said, quote, on his HBO talk show, quote, "I don't trust the government, especially with my health," end quote. I honestly don't get this. In the first place, I would tend to rely on what my personal physician says. And my personal physician says there's no need for me to get this vaccine because of my age. And my age has to do with the fact that I've probably been exposed to it over the course of my life. Kathy is in, and I don't have any underlying debilitating illnesses. Kathy, being female but not pregnant, means that she's not, in her age group, is not all that exposed to it. Molly, on the other hand, who's 5 years old, as soon as it's available, and her pediatrician lets us know, we will get Molly vaccinated with the nasal injection, the same way as we did, all three of us did, for the seasonal flu earlier this year. And I know that a lot of people are just absolutely adamant that the way to go is not vaccines. And I've said before, I completely believe in vaccines. I'm sure there can be arguments made the other way, but we don't live in a society where those arguments, to me, hold up. We live in a highly mobile society that's constantly exposed to each other, trading stuff back and forth. No, I'm an advocate of vaccinations. Back in the 70s, during was it the Ford administration? No, I didn't get a vaccination back then, but I was immortal back then. I didn't have to worry about it because in 1974, 75, 76, I knew I was going to live forever. And I was never going to get ill, never get any degenerative diseases, and certainly not going to be laid low by flu. So I didn't get one back then. You know, when you're immortal, you don't have to do that crap. But I'm not immortal anymore. And neither are you, unless, you know, unless you're in your 20s or early 30s and you're immortal. There's also a good chance that the swine flu will kill you. But, you know. So, I don't get the resistance to flu vaccinations. I mean, I really don't. Especially everything I've read now, these vaccines have been produced pretty much the same way that seasonal flu vaccines are produced. I don't think there's any question here of the danger of a preservative or what's the word I'm looking for? Not polluted, but vaccines that are not clean. So what is the resistance? On tonight's news, the local news here, they had a case of a woman who developed this H1N1 flu when she was 7 months pregnant. They had to take the do a cesarean section to deliver her baby, and she died. The baby's alive. This flu seems to be going after pregnant women at an alarming rate, and children. So I don't know. Maybe you're much wiser than I am, which is would not be very hard to be, or maybe you know information I don't know, which would also not be very hard to be that person either. But as far as our family is concerned, and I think my children and grandchildren, my children feel this way about their kids too. Kathy and I have discussed this. Were I in a high-risk group, I would have it in a heartbeat. It's like I always get flu vaccines. So would she. Molly, and it appears all children over the age of what, two? Is it two to whatever the guidelines are, and you can find out what they are, all appear to be in a high-risk category. And I just absolutely refuse to think of, because I, as a parent, for whatever reason, refuse to take advantage of a preventive effort, that my child would die. Oh, my God. I mean, aren't we always talking about preventive medicine? Isn't that what vaccines are? I mean, come on. Am I missing something? Anyone want to comment on this? I may be dumber than a sack full of dirt on this stuff. But isn't preventive medicine what we're talking about here? Isn't vaccinations, aren't vaccinations a form of homeopathic medicine where... I mean, isn't that what, who was it? Lister? No, who did that? Not Lister. Who took cowpox? Who took cow dung and scraped a little bit of it into open sores on people to give them, to develop a smallpox. Who was that? Damn it. I hate when I can't call stuff up. But isn't that what homeopathic medicine is? You give a person a little bit of the thing that may make them ill so that their body builds its own defense mechanisms and immune response. Isn't that what it's about? I mean, to me, vaccinations are pure homeopathic medicine. Am I wrong? I don't know. Anyone want to take a shot at that? Maybe I need a quick education here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This is the Malloy Show. Just do some phone calls here. Robert is in driving in Harrisburg, PA. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. You know, you got so many things to talk about tonight. All of them seem pretty pertinent. But the one I find most interesting this time is the marijuana legalization idea you got there.
Yeah,
I've done a lot of my own research on that subject. And I, although I can't get a full and complete picture of how it became illegal, I've been getting a lot of clues. Like it was first made illegal in 1865. And the cotton growers were having a big problem with it because they were told they couldn't have the slaves anymore and they couldn't compete against the hemp. They started a smear campaign against it, much like Edison's smear campaign against alternating current, you know, just full of, or the Republican campaign right now against health care, where it's just where they just say anything that they can think of to make people believe them, you know?
Right, sure.
This, you know, that's how it was got illegal in the first place, and we've all been just stuck there with that ever since. Now, I mean, I'm not even suggesting everybody should smoke it. I mean,
well, but wasn't there a long stretch before Harry Anslinger in the 30s when marijuana was not illegal?
Well, it was illegal. It just wasn't enforced. Nobody did anything about it as long as you weren't growing it for a crop and competing with cotton.
I thought they were growing it in the form of hemp. And using it to in the place of hemp that was normally came from overseas, or have I got this all wrong?
Well, you might be right. Like I said, it's been real hard to get any real good information about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I do know that it was made illegal then because of the competition with the cotton, and the excuse that they used for part of that law was the, like I said, the smear campaign about smoking it.
Uh-huh.
The other part was that that we wanted a certain kind of clothing quality in the United States. They made a big issue about that.
And hemp fibers wouldn't do it. So
right.
So
right.
We had
Egyptian cotton versus the other kind of cotton that they had over there in Europe for a while.
Right.
Like way before that.
Well, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, Robert. I've never really done the kind of research that I guess I should where it concerns marijuana, whether it's in the hemp form, and I understand if you're growing hemp, it would take 3 acres to get you high. But, you know, hemp, marijuana, my history of marijuana starts, I guess, with Harry Anslinger in the 30s, like most people, I think, where it was demon weed. And back in the 50s, I can remember as a kid growing up seeing some of those movies about, you know, the Reefer Madness kind of things.
Reefer Madness. Well, there's a comic book that they actually put out just before the whole Reefer Madness nutcase going on. Called Hemp for Victory. They were actually, you know, in the World War II.
Yeah.
They promoted for farmers in the United States to grow it for parachutes and rope and
right.
And military clothing canvas and stuff like that.
I mean, what an idea. Aside from the fact that it really is, I think for adults, it's a fun, interesting drug. If you want to smoke it and get high, the other part of it, the part that doesn't get you high, the hemp plant itself, what an industry in the United States. I mean, there are
amazing stuff.
Yeah, you can buy, there are a couple of shops in the Atlanta area where you can buy hemp shirts and hemp backpacks and hemp this and hemp that. I've been to fairs, art fairs here in Atlanta where you can buy hemp soap, not in Atlanta, here in Georgia where you can buy hemp soap and so on and so forth. But what an industry.
And the syntax that they could put on it, the kind of revenue they could bring into the government.
Oh, my God. It's just incredible.
What would we do about the safety situations? You know, say we have safety inspectors and people that are in safety-sensitive jobs operating heavy equipment, heavy machinery. I mean, would we have a separate law on the books saying that?
Well, we have. Don't we have I guess that's up to corporate America to enforce. I mean, if somebody's drunk and behind the wheel of a car or a truck or a school bus, that they're violating the law, period. But I'm sure that people understand you get inebriated, you get high, you get loaded, whatever you want to call it, and go to work, you're liable not only to wind up in trouble with the law, but you're also going to lose your job. So I think there's a self-policing mechanism. My God, there's all kinds of drugs. If people are going to misuse drugs, they're going to misuse the drugs, whether they're at work, whether they're in the military, whether they're teaching school, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, a junkie's a junkie's a junkie. I don't care what the junk is. So I don't know. I don't know about, I think just common sense. Oh, never mind. We don't have common sense anymore. I get your point.
Uncommon sense.
Yeah, uncommon. All right, Robert.
Yeah, the testing's different there, you know, too. With the alcohol, they can test you right now to see if you're under the influence right now. When it comes to this other, there's 30 days, 60 days.
Well, there's a quick way to test whether or not somebody's on reefer, and that's just offer them a couple of peanut butter cups and see how they respond if they take it. Case closed, you know. I mean, whatever. All right, Robert, I got to move on.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. I got to move on because we have a break coming. Oh, wait a minute. We're going to have a break for a minute. Oh, my God, I feel like CNN now. What's that line that they use? We have to leave it there. We have to leave it there. Have you all seen that Daily Show piece? Oh, my God. It's, you know, I'm sure it's YouTubed out there. CNN, we have to leave it there. Stewart just absolutely slices and dices this CNN thing. We have to leave it there. Who do we have here? Stat is in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, Stat.
Scott. I'm
sorry. Oh, Scott. Hi, Scott.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Scott, hold on. Hold on. I got to put you on hold. Can you hold on?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back right after the break because we're getting ready to make some music here and get out of the way for commercials and that kind of stuff. So stick around. Scott, you're next. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. It was Edward Jenner, thanks to the people who wrote in, who dipped a needle in cow dung and scratched into people's skin, cowpox, to get immunities for smallpox. We were talking with Scott, driving in Savannah. Okay, Scott, thanks for holding on.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the reluctance of people to get vaccinated.
Uh-huh.
You may have already touched on this, but science education in this country is poor.
Right.
And people don't trust what they don't understand.
True.
And I think that could be part of the reason why they're not getting vaccinated. My own science education is pathetic. My wife, on the other hand, is a federal toxicologist,
mm-hmm.
and she went straight out and got a vaccination and told me I should get one too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm I'm just confused as hell, Scott. I really am. Hey, listen, a lot of static, but thank you, Scott. I appreciate what you had to say. Thank you, Scott. Driving near Savannah, listening on XM. All right, Scott is pro vaccination, as I am, but here's a couple of different opinions from two people whose emails I read a lot on this program. First, Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Novartis, one of the companies producing this stuff, is reportedly using cancerous tumor cells from dogs as the growth medium for the virus used in the vaccine, according to a doctor who heads a committee on public health in the German parliament. Not much explanation as to why either. The other issue is that Novartis is marketing several different versions, live virus, killed virus, ones with aluminum or squalene adjuvants, only for sale outside the U.S., by the way, and ones without adjuvants, etc. No explanation for that either. Preventive medicine is fine. Taking chances for profit is not. That's the underlying issue these days. There's been a growing tendency of the drug companies to behave unscrupulously, hiding unflattering data, etc., to maintain profits. The days of Jonas Salk giving up licensing profits for the polio vaccine are long gone. Mike, Michael in New Mexico. And then Captain Mary kind of tees off on what he said about Novartis. She writes, Baxter, Novartis, GlaxoSmithKline, Sanofi, and AstraZeneca are all U.S. sources for H1N1 vaccines. Let's take them one at a time. Baxter contaminated seasonal flu vaccines with live virus and sent batches to 18 sites in 2009. Only a quality check in the Czech Republic stopped a pandemic. Novartis has acquired Chiron, which produced contaminated vaccines during the earlier avian flu. Novartis itself has produced Prexeg, Xjade, Zelnorm, and Lamisil, which variously caused liver damage, liver and kidney failure, heart problems, and death. GlaxoSmithKline has produced Paxil and Ceroxit, addiction, suicide, Avandia, heart attacks, used orphans at New York's Incarnation Children's Center as lab rats to test AIDS drugs and double doses of measles vaccine. Children as young as 4 got cocktails of 7 drugs at one time. Sanofi has produced Ketek, causing liver damage, heart, visual problems, unconsciousness, and death, which was approved by the FDA despite fraudulent studies. Sanofi also produced Lovenox, also known as enoxaparin. It was recalled, contaminated with oversulfated chondroitin sulfate. AstraZeneca has produced Zyprexa, Seroquel, and Risperdal to be used for diabetes, pancreatitis, stroke, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, and suicide. Those drugs have caused those conditions. Illegal marketing of Abraxane. All the U.S. vaccine sources have said that they may reintroduce mercury, the Marisol, and squalene, which can cause muscle and respiratory paralysis, into multi-dose batches if the demand for shots is high. Oh, Christ. All the vaccines are processed with mercury, formaldehyde, aluminum hydroxide, and polysorbate 80, and trace amounts remain in the final product. Flu mist contains live attenuated virus that people shed for up to 3 weeks, thus possibly infecting others, if not themselves. In 2007, FDA inspectors found excessive amounts of mold and bacteria during early stages of the production of flu mist. In pre-licensed clinical trials of flu mist, there was an increased risk of asthma, upper respiratory infections, musculoskeletal pain, otitis media, and croup for some children, and an increased risk for upper respiratory symptoms in adults after inhaling the live virus. Cat Mary in Memphis. Jesus, God. Okay, so what to do, everybody? I mean, some of this is referencing flu vaccines produced, seasonal flu vaccines, of which I have gotten a flu shot probably every year for the past 30 years, 25 years, 25 years anyway. Molly has gotten flu shots her entire life. Kathy does. These are seasonal flu shots. Now, I'm not, so provincial as to say, well, it didn't happen to me, therefore it won't happen. I mean, I understand there's all kinds of variables here. Oops, don't drop your microphone, Mike. There's all kinds of variables, including the vaccine maker, or maybe the overall physical condition of the person getting vaccinated. I don't know. Molly had flu mist a month ago, 5 weeks ago. She had the live virus, attenuated virus, up her nose, and nothing bad happened at all. I mean, there was nothing. And Molly, and I have to say this, and again, I don't mean to reduce the general down to the specific where it concerns one kid in one family. But Molly, I think she's into her sixth year now. I think she was sick bad enough to go to bed once in her entire life. And that was very short-lived. I think it was just like one night. We were on the air here. It was about a year and a half ago. She was thrown up all over the place and she had diarrhea. During the commercial breaks, we had her down here in the studio with us on this little day bed that we put her on. Some nights she'll wake up when we're doing the show and she just comes down and gets in bed here. But that's the only time. Molly's never been sick. I'm not exaggerating. She's had a couple of, low-grade fevers. That would spike up at, maybe 101 and sniffles and, that kind of stuff. Well, I guess that's sick. Yeah, maybe four or five times in her life. But nothing ever that lasted more than, with her, 36 hours, 48 hours, and she's had every single vaccination that is recommended by the American Pediatric Society, whatever the hell it's called. Her doctor is a woman who, when I first called her doctor, when the scare first came out, and I said, hey, listen, she's the one, this is the pediatrician, I brought this up on the air, this is a pediatrician, when I asked for Tamiflu in advance. This is a pediatrician who said, no, I'm not going to recommend that for a number of reasons, not the least of which there's a moral question here. You can't rat hole this stuff because people who are sick may need it. I'm not going to do that. Whereas my general practitioner did, my primary care doctor, he said, oh, sure, here, wrote a script. And it's still sitting in the medicine closet here. But Molly, who has had every single vaccination, I mean, my God, my 30-year-old son had maybe six different vaccinations. Molly's had what, Kathy, 20? 15? So, again, I don't mean to be so provincial as to reduce this down to, nothing's ever happened to me, therefore it doesn't happen. I mean, that sounds like something a conservative would say. But that does factor in here in my way of thinking as a parent. You understand what I'm saying? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
you're on the street. When evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part.
Oh, 21 past the hour. Now, in fairness, at factcheck.org, which is, I think, is a fairly reliable web source. It's run, it's a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center. They have a lengthy article about inoculation misinformation, and the date is today. And it claims, or it says, claims that the swine flu vaccine is dangerous range from seriously overblown to flat out false. But just a summary here very quickly, since I read Prairie 2 and, no, I didn't read Prairie 2, did I? No, Michael in, Roswell, New Mexico, and Cap Mary in Memphis. Anyway, this is what it says. Wild rumors are flying about the newly developed vaccine for pandemic influenza H1N1, also known as swine flu, quote, quote. We've seen emails stating that the vaccine is tainted with antifreeze or Agent Orange, causes Gulf War syndrome, or has killed U.S. Navy sailors. One says the vaccine is an evil depopulation scheme. The claims are nearly pure bunk with only trace amounts of fact. If you are the sort who trusts anonymous emails more than you do doctors and experts from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and U.S. Food and Drug Administration, you may wish to stop reading now. For others, here are the facts as stated by the best authorities we can find. The vaccine does have some risks, the same risks as the seasonal flu vaccine. Except for the virus, it is functionally identical to the vaccine that's given every year. Next, the multi-dose formulation of the vaccine does contain thimerosal, which prevents contamination. Some have accused thimerosal of causing developmental disorders in children, but scientific evidence doesn't support this. Next, the vaccine does not contain squalene, which has been accused, also without good evidence, of causing Gulf War syndrome. Next, there's no reason to believe that a vaccination would cause Guillain-Barre syndrome. That syndrome was associated with several hundred flu vaccinations in 1976, but there's been no evidence of an association since then, despite close monitoring. Next, while it's true that a Navy vessel was prevented from deploying because of a flu outbreak, that had nothing to do with the vaccine, which hadn't been developed at the time, and there were no deaths aboard the ship, as some emails claim. Finally, vaccination is not mandatory for the public nationally or in any state, although New York requires that healthcare providers get vaccinated. Massachusetts legislation granting standby powers in case of health emergencies does not require vaccination or establish quarantine camps, quote, quote. It goes on, the e-rumors claim generally that the vaccine is dangerous. One even claims it's a government depopulation plant. We'll say it straight out. There are some real risks to the H1N1 vaccine. There's nothing shady or secretive about them, though. They're exactly the same as the risk of seasonal flu vaccines. Blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on. And it's a very lengthy piece here. It's at factcheck.org. Now, I know a lot of you use factcheck.org as a source of verification about, you know, a lot of stuff that flies around the internet that's complete, you know, horse droppings. So, you know, I don't know what to think. Maybe Sandra knows. Sandra's in Berkeley, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Sandra.
Well, I really wanted to say something else, but let me say what I think about that, and that is that I trust some doctors. I trust scientists. I was brought up in a science-based family, but I don't trust the pharmaceutical corporations further than I can throw them, which is not very far.
Well, I agree with that. Partially. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies have developed some good medicines, but they've been taken over by marketers and, you know, developing drugs for, you know, spastic leg syndrome or whatever the hell that was called.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so,
right,
so
right.
Yeah, I can agree with a lot of that, Sandra. But on the other hand, do we condemn the entire pharmaceutical industry? They have done some good, haven't they?
Well, yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that as a challenge.
I don't know if they answered that, Ken. But listen, let me tell you why I called, because I had this great idea, Mike.
All right.
I'm sure other people have thought of it. And, you know, but why instead of making Bernanke head of the Fed again,
right,
why don't we put Greenspan back in charge? Because he now sees the error of his ways, and all these other people, including Bernanke and Geithner, all those people, are all, you know, students of his.
Well, that's true, but Greenspan, I don't think he would take it, would he? You know, people don't like to come back and clean up the messes they caused.
But maybe they should.
Well, yeah. All right, let's get George Bush back, and we can uninvade two countries. No, I hear what you're saying, Sandra. I wish there was some way to do that, but I think Greenspan's made it clear that, you know, he's played in the sandbox enough. He caused enough damage to the middle class, which was his goal, I would imagine, and he's rewarded his Wall Street buddies. So, you know, he's out of there. Sandra, I got to go. Thanks. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
Sitting down, actually. But I appreciate the sentiment. The number here is 877-996-2556. We're talking about anything that we brought up during the first part of the program. But the H1N1 vaccine, it seems like a lot of people have their minds really made up. People who are pro-vaccine, for the most part, will get either the injection or the nasal mist, the flu mist, although I don't know who that's recommended for. If we get Molly vaccinated, it's going to be the dead virus, which would be the shot, as opposed to the flu mist. So it seems to break down to people who are, you know, very much in favor of vaccines as preventive, a form of preventive medicine. I tend to fall into that camp. And the people who are absolutely convinced that this is not a good thing to put into your body for a number of reasons. I'm not talking about the people that say, you know, it's a plot by Obama to kill off, you know, liberals or conservatives or whatever. I'm not talking about that camp. Those people are crazy. But they're, you know, I mean, distrust of the pharmaceutical industry is, I certainly am in that group. But on the other hand, you know, what do you do? I mean, if you have a kid who's in school, a young child, you know, what do you do? Who doesn't have all the immunities, my God, the different kinds of flu. You know, I went through there was a pandemic, I guess is the right way to put it, back in 1950. Oh, God, when was it? 57? 58? Do you remember that? I guess it was 58. I was just starting high school then, and I didn't get sick. But I can remember going to classes where there would be three kids out of a class of 30 and a substitute teacher that went on for like a week. I'll never forget that. I mean, walking into a high school where there was hardly anyone there. Anybody else remember that? And then wasn't there, there was another flu that came around in what, 70, mid-70s? I think I did get that one. But over the years, I've gotten, you know, all kinds of, I guess I would call it flu, maybe not. But I know I've been exposed to it. Maybe it was so mild. So I'm not really concerned about the H1N1 virus for that reason. And plus, people of my age group are not particularly vulnerable. Usually, people in my age group are told to get a seasonal flu shot. Because if you don't, you can get the flu, and the flu won't kill you, but the attendant pneumonia will kill you quicker than hell. So, I've gotten a flu shot, like I said, for the past 30 years, 25, 30 years, for sure. Never had a bad reaction, never got the flu after getting the shot, and never had any noticeable side effects. I just haven't. Nor has anyone, and see, here I go again, sounding very provincial, but nor has anyone I know, nor my kids, and now grandchildren. No, I've not seen bad stuff from vaccines, which is not to say that bad stuff isn't out there. Jesus, but to a certain degree, don't we base our decisions on collected experience? I mean, don't we? Don't we all do that? I don't know. I just, I hate the hell out of the fact that there has to be a discussion like this. I mean, I really do. I wish I lived somewhere in that fantasy land where there was an industry called the pharmaceutical industry, whose function was to offer preventive care, first of all. Of course, I guess that wouldn't be the pharmacy. Well, I don't know. There was a healthcare industry. How's that? That provided preventive care. And if you did get ill, there were curative agents you could take. There, if you wanted to do vaccines, you didn't have to worry about pollutants or advogens or whatever the hell they're called. You didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. You just, could trust. Listen to me. Oh, my God. Where do you think you live, Malloy? I said if it were, some fantasy, some fantasy place. I know where I live, and I know the time I live in. But so what's the bottom line? We trust nobody? Back in the day, that's what Abby Hoffman said. Don't trust anybody over 30. Over 30? Just get the point. You don't trust anyone over 17. I don't know. I don't know what to do. Have no idea. So, Steve is in Long Beach, California. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
Man. Let me get a little background on myself.
Okay.
I'm a 51-year-old African-American male who happens to be gay and also an HIV positive.
Uh-huh.
On a daily basis, my brother, I wake up with different dilemmas on my plate.
I'll bet.
And I'm like, I've been fortunate to be in this condition, and my T cells are high enough to where I'm not doing any HIV medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, I'm doing 9 different drugs a day.
Mm-hmm.
That, I have to remember to do these things. I also have a prescription for medicinal marijuana.
Right.
And I'm like, every day I get confused and even a little bit more scared as to what I'm seeing my country go to. I'm like, I got bad news that I constantly have to decipher to find out what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of the people who are so glad that you, Randy, Tom, and Stephanie are even near the airwaves to let me know that I'm not insane. But I'm like, man, it gets to be scary out here.
Well, sure.
In Long Beach with all this apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder sometimes, which way are we supposed to turn? it can be just so much confusion. And a lot of times, it boils down to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I need every day is the truth. But I'm so bamboozled by what's given to me when I flick on my cable that I pay for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, man. I think you guys are the biggest thing that I chant for, because I'm a practicing Buddhist also. I meet you in Dashonade.
Mm.
And I just wish, like that place you were talking about, it would be pharmaceutical, but it would be pharmacy with an F, not a PH. Because it seems to me that with that PH also comes the problem.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I would think that you would have a more immediate interest in having the truth. A lot of people can you know, a lot of people I think can say, well, you know, if I don't get the whole truth, nothing but the truth right now, you know, I'll get by. I can see where somebody in your situation would need the truth, and how frustrating it's got to be. I'm not saying people don't need the truth. I'm just saying sometimes, you know, the truth can wait a second. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But there are folks who you know, that can't be. So I certainly understand your frustration, Steve.
It's like this situation with healthcare. I'm from Ohio, so I know how Republicans really, really can get ugly, especially after having dealt, or I didn't deal with it, but I was a kid mm-hmm. when we went through 68.
Right.
I recall that, man. I mean, you know, the 1, 2, 3. First they shoot Martin, then they shoot Bobby, mm-hmm. then they shoot the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's going to stand up after that? Everybody's scared.
Yeah.
And then we got another chance, almost, what, 40 years later? And we almost blew it, but we didn't blow it. We got somebody in there who happens to be African-American, or as the media tries to portray him, oh, well, he's Kenyan-American. Nah, he's a brother from here.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Hawaii. That's still here.
Right, right.
And I'm like, why is it so necessary for us to try to tear things down when we don't have to?
Yeah,
build them up.
I understand what you're saying, Steve, and I wish, you know, I wish I could come up with something that made sense. But you know, while our, you know, obviously our lives have some essential differences, you know, we're all on the same page. You know, I understand that. But I don't know anything. I don't know anything. Steve, I gotta go, man. Thanks. Before the hour, our crew includes, but is not limited to, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Kay Petrini, Bruce Enberg, Sharon Gordy, Ben Birch, Catherine Bay. Who together, along with moi, brought you tonight's program. Brian is in Beverly Hills, California. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
My pleasure.
If I may say two things, I would like to say something about just quickly about the homeopathy and also to talk about medical marijuana.
Okay.
First of all, homeopathy, you know, vaccines are not exactly homeopathy, because homeopathy is when you actually take a very, very small dose of a substance, not necessarily a disease that you have, but just a substance that may be potentially toxic,
mm-hmm.
but in very, very low doses, over time you take it, and that helps your immune system. It stimulates your immune system.
So it's absolutely incorrect to say that vaccinations are a homeopathic approach? Because isn't the idea, I mean, allopathic medicine is where somebody gets diseased and you try to fight the disease with burning or chemicals or or whatever.
Right.
And homeopathy is where you give the person a little bit of what's ailing them or what might ail them. I believe that's the theory behind vaccines. And your body learns how to defend against it in a natural way.
Right. But it's just, you know, again, homeopathy, you know, there are other definitions as far as what substance you're actually taking for a particular disease.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, I'd rather talk about the medical marijuana.
Okay.
First of all, I just I saw there was a vote on MSN for, you know, having people vote on whether they approve or not, and 86% voted that for the yay on the ruling for the medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'd like to
Was that just in the state of California or nationwide?
That was nationwide.
Nationwide, okay.
Yeah. I'd like to compare it. In a way, marijuana is kind of like the public option in the insurance industry.
Oh, yeah?
Because, if you think about it, what you have is how many people would choose to use medical marijuana over other drugs if they knew that it worked better?
Probably a substantial number, sure.
Exactly. So, you know, like the public option, if it actually came to exist, people would choose that. A lot of people would choose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I'm happen to be a medical marijuana patient myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say really quickly, there was a couple of years ago, there was a place that was open, a dispensary. And they were offering, there was a whole care facility. They had yoga classes that were free for patients. They had Qigong classes. They had events like bingo and Scrabble tournaments and just
mm-hmm.
all these things. I mean, it was like the closest thing I could compare it to would be like a senior center.
Mm-hmm.
It was just really, really nice and mellow and clean and all that. And the feds came in with their guns and axes and chopped the place down.
Oh, my God.
Yep. And I just, you know, I mean, that's the tone,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of, I mean, I'm hoping that it's going to fade. But
well, you know, you talk about talk about sickness and illness. I mean, the sickness that we, or at least people in power have in this country where it concerns marijuana, you know, this is one of those issues I really cannot get my mind around. I just can't do it.
I can't either.
Why? The effects of this plant are just activate every single thing in a reactionary and makes them go crazy.
Yep.
I don't get that. All right, Brian, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, man. Take care. Troy is in Wisconsin. Hey, Troy.
Hey, Mike. Actually, I was able to get your program on XM's. I got it free with my new car, so yay.
Oh, good. All right.
So just a new listener, very huge fan. I wanted to comment on the whole thing about swine flu vaccine that you were talking about earlier.
All right.
When you said that, many people are thinking, well, this is just a ploy by Obama, just like get everyone dead who's a conservative or whatever. And I'm like, there's no way this cannot be true. And I researched it on the internet, and it's like, oh my God, the right wing did it again.
Yeah, are they saying that?
Yeah, like there are people on there saying, like, you purposely putting antifreeze in the vaccine.
All that does is just piss me off so bad I can hardly think straight.
Oh, I know. And these are the same people that said, like, Obama's a terrorist. If you support universal healthcare, you're a Nazi. Pulling out of Iraq is un-American.
Right.
Obama's the Antichrist. There's death panels, so on and so forth. And it just seems like a further ploy by the conservative parties and also the Republican parties to just kill the liberal movement at any cost whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Or destroy this presidency at any cost whatsoever, no matter what he does. If he wins a Nobel Peace Prize, if he goes to talk to kids at school, if he advocates this or advocates that, the right wing, the crazy people in this country will find some kind of a secret agenda that is out to commit murder, when in fact that's what the Republican agenda is. This is the oldest trick in the book. You know, you accuse the person across the aisle of doing exactly what you're doing in order to divert attention and to you know, fire the first shot. I don't know. I would like to give a good case of red ass to every single one of these right wingers. I really would. I don't want to kill them. I just want to have them immobilized, take their pants down, put them over my lap, and just paddle the living Christ out of them, you know, till they couldn't walk for a week. But that's just me. Hey, listen, I got to leave there, Troy. Thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. I want to paddle them. I really do. I do. I just want to just smack their asses, every single one of them. Oh, man. All right, I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Thanks a lot for hanging out. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.